got you shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it's sink or swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it's sink or swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. Welcome to the shrimp tank, word to Chris Hanks. Before to put it all together, this is big thanks. Doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real, this life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This is just what I do and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, well homie keep going. You know the saying, you gon' reap what you sow in. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 2016, like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general from the front, I'ma lead the charge. Like a federal, fell on my lap, never going hard as ever. The results
match. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Shrimp Tank. Coming to you live from the Business Radio X Networks right here in Sandy Spring every single Thursday from 11:30 to 12:30. I'm your co-host, Ted Jenkins, sitting here with my co-host, Chris Hanks, who's the executive director and founder of the Now Shore Center for Entrepreneurship. What do we do on the Shrimp Tank? Well, a lot of weeks, we bring you some of the brightest and best CEOs in and around Atlanta and across the state of Georgia. We've heard over the last 80 or 90 weeks, some unbelievable CEOs that have brought us amazing stories, anywhere from franchising to real estate to the security business. We have people that even waterproof basements that have built amazing, amazing multi-dollar businesses. Now, I will say to you that what we learn on the Shrimp Tank is about the do's and don'ts of growing, running, and starting a business. And we've said for some time that we want to come into the community and bring in the kids, the future of tomorrow, the ideas that you're going to see in the strip mall centers around you and on the internet and everywhere that you will be able to do your business. So we're really excited today because we're going to have a special Shrimp Tank. And I think this is actually going to be more of the mainstream of what we're doing on the show besides having CEOs, which is having people come on and present their ideas and having us talk about it on here so you can see the format. Almost like the Shark Tank, except I don't know if we're going to angel fund these guys today, but we're going to be having this in almost a Shrimp Tank format. Before I do that, for those of you that don't know what's going on at KSU, it's really unbelievable. The first university in the state of Georgia that will actually have a degree in entrepreneurship. It's amazing and soon to be coming up the KSU 100. So, Chris, what's happening now just in terms of where the program's at and the KSU 100 for those that have not listened to the Shrimp Tank, have not heard us before? Want to know what it's all about and the explosion happening at Kennesaw State.
Sometimes it's easier to talk about what's not going on. It feels like that anyway, with all the things that are going on with entrepreneurship and the students. Super excited today to have students in the studio with me. These are all my students, all of them participating in KSU Top 100, which is where we take 100 student businesses. We eliminate them in a Shark Tank type format, but we also combine the format with the Voice, where we have rock stars and entrepreneurs in entrepreneurship partner and mentor with these students to help them go farther, faster, and get better results. And we will get down to one. So there's four people here.
What does the one winner get? What do they get exactly?
They get $100,000 in services, equity, and cash, but only $5,000 in cash because we know that they'll blow it.
Do they get free meals at the wonderful KSU dining facilities, which I understand now are in the top 10 in the country of all dining facilities?
Absolutely.
Is that true?
Actually, yeah.
Number two in the country?
Yes, sir.
Do we know who number one is or no?
It doesn't really matter. Some
there
small
we go.
Private
okay.
school.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense there. But it's amazing stuff. You know, one of my favorite entrepreneurs I look at, Chris, and then we'll get to our guests today because we've got a lot of them. We want to get them introduced. It should be exciting what we're going through today is Gary Vaynerchuk. Gary V. I don't know how many of you ever see Gary V, but there's not a profanity word that he doesn't like when he does his speeches. But he basically had this quote, and I wonder, you know, how you talk about it, and I'm wondering what everyone's going to say today in the show. But he's one of my favorite quotes on there that says, "I'm grinding while you're sleeping." And this whole notion of here that for an entrepreneur, there's no way to get around work. So when you're teaching, you know, these classes at KSU, how do you talk about this notion of work inside of the word entrepreneur?
Yeah, well, we talk a lot about that, just even the word work, because work almost implies, hey, how do I do less of that? And these students know that so this is going to sound pretty familiar to a recent lecture. I like to substitute that word art because we don't say, can I paint one less painting? right? And Rhodey, who's here, you know, who does our opening track, which is awesome. You know, he doesn't say, gosh, do I have to do one more song? You know, this is something that you get to do when you're building something of value and you're building something that matters. Your attitude shifts towards work. It doesn't become work. It becomes a privilege. So we talk in terms of that. And we also are very big into experience, right? So the grinding versus sleeping thing, you know, like we have classes where you're not memorizing things and in filling out Scantron bubbles, you are experiencing, and their final exam will be their experiences that they present to a group of seasoned entrepreneurs about what they have done, not what they have learned.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way to get around the work. A lot of entrepreneurs don't care about that. They don't want to know about that. All they see is the glory of the Mark Zuckerbergs of the world and having Facebook and, you know, billions of dollars. But it's a lot of hard work to get there.
Yeah, we want the benefit, not the sacrifice, right?
Very, very true. So you're listening to the Shrimp Tank right here on the Business Radio X Networks. We come to you live 11:30 to 12:30. Thanks for joining us today during your lunchtime. You can catch a replay of all of our broadcasts on shrimptankpodcast.com or download us on iTunes. What better to listen in the car? What are you going to listen to, like pop music in the car? No. Even Rhodey wouldn't do that. He's not going to listen to
that. Absolutely not.
Not pop music. I feel a little OG 97.9 in there for Rhodey is probably.
Oh, yeah.
It's got
stay rocking that.
It's something like that. But you should really download it because you're going to get amazing advice from some of the best CEOs in and around Atlanta, across the state of Georgia. And today we're really excited because we have four of the students here from Kennesaw State. And this is going to be a show where we're going to actually hear some ideas. So you better write these down. Just so you know, we won't make you sign a NDA agreement before you actually hear any of these ideas, but we're going to talk about them and flesh them out and see what comes of it. So we've got Brian, Rhodey, Joey, and Elise that are with us today. And if you don't know Rhodey, I wonder if it's Rhodey. It was Rhodey 2016, right? Is it Rhodey 2017 now? Is it?
It's Rhodey 2018, man. I'm looking ahead.
There you go. See?
Who actually came up with our a Shrimp Tank theme song, which is all in and around the internet now. So I guess we're going to start with Brian today. We'll start with the idea, and we want to hear more about your business, how you came up with it, and let's hear the story.
All right. So my name is Brian Keller. I'm the founder of Keller Guitars, and Keller Guitars is a acoustic electric guitar manufacturing company that uses professional luthiers to craft a high-quality guitar. These guitars, or the first line of the Keller Guitars, is called the Carpenter Series, which features different Bible verses, which are burned onto the surface. Our first line, our first guitar in the Carpenter series is our Psalms 95 guitar.
Psalms 95?
Psalms 95. Yeah. That verse talks a lot about worship and music in particular, and we thought it was a perfect verse to put on our first guitar.
Now, how did you get into the idea of saying that you're going to start handcrafting and guitars and making guitars? How did you even get into that?
So I have played guitar for about 12 years. And as I got better at guitar, I wanted to buy a high-quality guitar. They're very expensive. And honestly, when I did buy my Martin, which was $1,300, I didn't really like it that much. Honestly, I didn't think it was worth $1,300. So I decided to create my own guitar. And not only was it more cost-effective, but it really had a little bit more meaning to me with the verse and has a beautiful sound, very professional. It's perfect for, you know, playing on stage, recording in a studio, or just playing by myself as well. So I just wanted a piece that I like.
And how crowded is the marketplace today? Is the guitar market crowded? I mean, obviously, I know big companies like Fender that are out there, but is it a tough barrier to entry to get into the guitar business?
So there are a lot of big companies. If you're going for a high quality guitar, Taylor and Martin are generally, you know, the two that you shoot after. Keller Guitars we aim to be a high quality guitar at a little bit of a more affordable price. And we are specifically trying to market to a more Christian market. We know it's a little bit smaller, but these pieces will, I think, impact that specific market a lot more effectively.
And how much is it going to cost you to start the business? Or have you started it already? Are you just basically making guitars out of your dorm room? Or what? You know, how does this work? Do you have a manufacturing facility? I mean, how does it work so far?
Yeah, so we work with the professional luthiers, like I said. So I actually have a prototype so far. We are working with a couple different companies to make these things real. We are starting a Kickstarter fund actually next week. So that'll be live online next week. The video's ready and everything, so you can check that out. And that'll be for crowdfunding. It's going to cost about $18,000 to get the initial order, and that's going to be for 120 guitars.
You can make 120 guitars for $18,000?
I can.
And they play.
And they're beautiful.
And they're beautiful. That's amazing. So you wholesale the product roughly for what, $150 a guitar is what it costs you to make it? And then what will you sell it when you're out there for? What would the margins be on it?
So for a high quality guitar, we're not shooting for the top highest quality, but more of a mid-high quality. They generally run for about $1,000, $1,200. Our guitars, we're shooting for about $799 to under $1,000.
Hey, Ryan Lee, feel free to ask questions if you want to along the way here.
I was going to say, you know, give the guitar with some picks and a strap and, you know, throw in, if you buy one today, you get an extra one tomorrow kind of thing. Sounds like a good idea, Lee.
Sure. Hey, that's a really good idea. This is Lee Heisman. Thanks for letting me come on the Tank, guys. Chris knows, you know, I am cherry picking the best pitches for KSU 100. I want to
repeat. Is that right?
I want to repeat, Ted.
And didn't you play a recorder in high school or something like that?
I have one in my back pocket here. Okay, I'll put it up there for you. So if the students here don't know, I'm cherry picking the best students because I was fortunate enough to mentor the winner last year at KSU 100. So I really like your idea. I have a number of businesses, and one of mine, as Chris promotes a lot through his class, is that we don't strive for the entire market. We strive for a particular segment of the market. So do you find it to be limiting that, hey, you know what? I'm only going to strive for, as you said, a Christian following with an affordable price. Have you really run the market and seen if there's enough people out there looking to fill that spot?
I definitely have found a lot of people that have interest in the guitars. I have a list of already about 20 people that want to place an order, but I'm trying to get that through the Kickstarter. So, I have found quite a lot of people just personally, and that's without any marketing or advertising. And I think that the market definitely is large enough to successfully have sales, but it's not broad enough to get, you know, drowned out by Taylor.
So, Brian, this is Lee again. One more thing, and I apologize. When it comes to me, rubber always hits the road, so we're not going to glaze over anything. You have 100, you say 120 people that are interested?
About 20 right now.
20, I apologize. So, and again, to the rest of the young entrepreneurs that are pitching and listening, having people interested, it's a big distance and a gap before they cut a check. Can you push them to put some money down? Can you push them to do a pre-order? Because having a level of interest and listening to words of people saying, I'm interested, what is stopping you from getting pre-orders right now or a small deposit? Because nothing is real, Ted, until what? Show me.
Yeah, show me the money. Until you get a paycheck, you got nothing.
Exactly. That is extremely important. That's the main thing that the Kickstarter is going to find out. So we do have an early bird discount. The guitars are only going to be $499 for the first 10 people that order them. And then they do go up to $799, which is going to be their normal retail price. So our break even on the Kickstarter is going to be about 46 guitars. And we have about, you know, 20 people that say they will. Say we get 10 of those. Mm-hmm. We're already a fourth of the way.
Is there anybody famous in the Christian music segment that you can give one of the guitars to? Is there anybody that can be a potential advertorial for you, so to speak, in that marketplace?
Definitely. That's going to be one of our biggest goals for 2017, is to find a lot of Christian worship leaders or artists. We just want them to have the guitar as a gift and play it, see if they like it.
I'd drop one on Andy Stanley, let him put them up on a Sunday. I mean, that thing's for legit. I mean, he's put 20, 30,000 people or more on that. He's a big dog here in the city.
Exactly.
Very, very interesting. And how do you scale the business? You know, I guess it's interesting. You think about it. Let's say you sell it. How do you make this from a hobby into a business, right? So you sell 100 guitars, you make a little bit of money, and it's nice. How are you thinking about how you might scale the business down the road?
Well, with manufacturing, you can always, you know, manufacture more product if you need to. That takes more luthiers.
I'm assuming with Trump, you'll have to do that in the United States now. You won't be able to offshore it, so.
You know, with manufacturing, we can always scale. That's just going to depend on sales and promotion. So we want to get it promoted, get people knowing the guitar, really falling in love with the guitar. And once we've accomplished that, then we can
worry about it. I'll do one more question, then we'll move on to Rhodey for the next pitch on here. But what do you see the number one marketing technique you'll use to be able to sell the guitars?
Social media is very powerful. But number one will definitely be the artists. People want to hear a guitar. They don't just want to see a picture of it. They want to hear it, then they want to see it, and then they want to play it themselves. So ideally, we'll get them to those worship leaders, artists, and then we'll have the guitars in local retailers like Guitar Center so that musicians can go and play them themselves.
Very cool. You're listening to the Shrimp Tank right here on the Business Radio X Networks. I'm Ted Jenkins, your co-host, sitting with my co-host, Chris Hanks. He's the executive director and founder for the now Shore Center. I actually met Doug Shore. Nice guy.
He is a nice
Center
guy.
For Entrepreneurship. He was breathing during that meeting. I could see down there. It was good. And we've got Ryan Redhawk on the mixer and Lee Heisman joining us today. We're actually getting to interview students from Kennesaw State today with their business ideas. And excited to hear our next idea from Rhody. Those of you that don't know Rhody, he's got our theme song, The Shrimp Tank. I don't think it hit the Billboard Top 100, but it definitely has made a mark on every single person that's come on this show has said, we love the theme song. So thanks for doing that. And what's the pitch?
Well, the pitch is it's pretty simple. I'm a rap artist, producer, and entrepreneur in that order.
Mogul.
What was that?
Mogul.
Yes, that's like the goal, really. Yes. That really is the end game. You know, I look at people like Dr. Dre, like Jay-Z, like Drake even now, and that's really what I'm going after. I don't want to be known as the guy who can, you know, he's a great artist, but that's really all he does. No, I want to be the guy that everybody knows is, you know, the one that's really pulling the strings and making things happen, but also being that front man, you know. So that's really the goal.
Yeah. And Rhody, you got a show coming up, right?
I do have a show coming up. Thank you. It's March 4th at the Vinyl. Tickets are $10. You can get them online. Just Google Rhody, R-O-T-E-Y, and it should pop right up for you. It's called The Blackout. It's sort of like a concert / blacklight party type deal, really trying to take it to the next level.
What do you mean? So at the concert, how many songs will you do at a concert?
So it's going to be like a 30-minute set. So depending on, you know, if I want to throw any little curveballs at the crowd or anything like that, you know, usually it averages out about, you know, 10, 12 songs, something like that. And that's playing the whole song. So it's really variable. There's really no, you know, cut and dry answer when it comes to the music industry, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
And you actually sing on your newer track, right? Which surprised me.
I do sing a little bit. You know, that's been a goal of mine for a while. You know, I feel like I'm sort of past the dying cat phase of singing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So,
you know, and auto-tune is a really great thing. So yeah, it's made it possible for rappers to...
Yeah. Can you get us a new theme song, all auto-tune? That'd be awesome.
Oh, man.
Ted Jenkins!
Nah, I try to be pretty adamant with actually not using that much auto-tune. You know, just bring it up to the next, you know, really make sure that, you know, to everyone I'm out of the dying cat phase, not just myself.
Isn't that what Lady Gaga is going to be doing during the Super Bowl here? The auto-tune or something? You can't. They're not, a lot of the stars are not as good live as they are when they're in the studio. So how do you, in this business, it seems to me that it's so difficult to break through. So how do you plan to get that first? And I realize there's probably mini stardom to get to superstardom, but how do you get that first breakthrough? Is it the rap that you cut? Is it you write a tune for a superstar? I mean, what's the quickest way to get to that initial of putting your name on the scene?
You know, that's really one of the things that really draws me to this industry. There really is no like quick way to do this thing. It's really just all about buckling down and getting ready for the ride and, you know, just keep on grinding and grinding and grinding. So the way that I go about it, I just try to make the best music that I can and put it out to the world and use my marketing experience and degree soon to really take it to the next level. You know?
Well, I'm curious that you say that. You know, what's interesting is I see different mediums on how pop stars and rap stars get their music out there. One of them I'm seeing, you know, maybe in a similar path as a guy like Little Dicky. Yes, yeah. I know that. Yes, I do. I can say that I know that name. And he basically, I understand, like, he got his name out there getting 40 million YouTube views by creating a rap song literally using no money whatsoever, that he borrowed people's homes. He borrowed cars and he got, is that true? Is that?
Saved that money. Yeah, it's a good song.
Saved that money.
Saved that money.
Ted.
Now, Chris, are you going to be able to do the lyrics now on that? Is that? I mean, Hanks, you're going to be able to do the lyrics on that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course.
Well, Ted, jump into the business part. Rhody, you know, we watched you at KSU 100 last year.
Yes, you did.
Pitch your business idea. And you talk in detail about being the mogul, or Ted rather uses that term. Most people in entrepreneurship, they think of where they want to get to. When you talk to a lot of successful entrepreneurs, they talk about where they were grinding it out, but they usually don't go into that transitional detail. They say, well, I just opened this business and this is how it's gone. What I find most interesting is it's really that kind of, I'm dating myself, gentlemen and ladies, kind of the eye of the tiger, Ted. You remember when Rocky lost to Mr. T and he had to go back to the old gym, right? Do you remember that?
Prediction? So, pain.
Exactly. So, Rhody, you know, that transition to mogul, you know, you being an artist, we love your music, we love your song. That isn't an issue. I see you being successful, being an artist, but that's not what you want to do. You said you want to transition that into to business mogul. Where do you see you and how do you get to that point?
Well, just to totally clarify what I mean by that, I do definitely want to be known as a fantastic artist first and foremost. But as far as transitioning, thank you. as far as transitioning to that real mogul phase, you know, for me, the way that I've always seen it happen is these artists, they just keep on striking while the iron's hot and building and building and building and, you know, not looking back for a minute, always forward, just, you know, making sure that it all, you know, gets down to work. And it really just, I feel like I'm sort of giving you a runaround answer, but I feel like there really is no, you know, this is how it's going to happen. Because
I'm just curious as we discuss this, because these are really cool, these two ideas to start, so different and unique in their own way. How do you deal today with all the things such as the trademarking, the licensing, the monetizing of this, knowing that my experience in seeing people in the music business is very easy to get ripped off and mm-hmm. so and get your money ripped off. And after a while, you think you're going to make a dollar and you make a penny. And there are a lot of artists that have gone through that. How do you protect yourself in this process legally? You know, what does that look like?
Well, I have, I'm blessed to have a very strong network. I know several very good attorneys. So as far as the legal protection, I feel like, you know, I'm blessed to have that network as well as just arming myself with the knowledge of it. I feel like that's one of my competitive advantages that I have is that I have received not only a business education, but also a music and entertainment business education. Yeah. So really just, you know, knowing what I'm getting myself into and being extremely cautious as if I'm tiptoeing through a minefield almost, is that really is what the music industry is.
Yeah, and one thing I just have to throw out that I really respect about Rhodey, because, you know, I've dealt with so many students who want to get in music or entertainment, you know, that have talent and they want to get paid to do something that's just kind of fun, right? Who doesn't want to be famous and have people love you and get paid millions of dollars? But Rhodey shows the hustle. He exhibits the entrepreneurial mindset. Like just last class on Tuesday, he's up there in front of the class announcing, hey, you know what? Here, you know, I've got this new CD. Here you go. And people were buying it right there in class. You know, he's not afraid to work and, you know, really plant a lot of seeds. And then hopefully, you know, if you keep planting seeds, you know, eventually maybe a few of them might harvest. So the work ethic that he seems to demonstrate, that super impresses me.
Thank you. I appreciate
super hustler.
That.
Well, guys, I want to take the privilege and I wave Ted down. I need to introduce our next student guest. We just had a big board meeting at KSU the other morning where we talked about that final end of the year luncheon. And we talked about a lot of donations that came in that day. And Chris was great to make that entire event, you know, your brainchild to make it student centric. And I'll tell you, of all the students speaking, this young man got a standing ovation in a room of, what, 350?
Yeah, it's a big room.
Big room, 350 entrepreneurs, CEOs. He got a standing ovation when he was done. He was the exemplary student of yours, Chris, last year. Joey Roos. Joey, and you have been our most consistent student guest on the show this year.
Well, thank you. That's quite an introduction. It's truly an honor to be here back one more week. The opportunity that the Entrepreneurship Center provides all of its students, if you're willing to go out there and pursue it, is truly, in my opinion, unmatched from any other school. So I've just been trying to accept and pursue all the opportunities that have been given to me through the center and do my best to bring value to other people.
So tell us a little bit about your business and the idea that you've got, that you're starting.
Sure. So it's called Art Inspired. And our goal...
Art Inspired.
Art Inspired. Yes, sir. And our goal is really twofold. We want to redefine the international philanthropic mindset. And secondly, redefine school fundraising in the United States. And we do that by buying products from World Fair Trade Certified Artisans abroad, specifically right now in Nepal, Thailand, and Peru, and then reselling them here in the United States through school fundraisers. Because I was very blessed to be able to go to private schools growing up, and we were constantly hustling to try and do fundraisers. And people bought things from us that were overpriced, right, that they didn't want, that they probably wouldn't use. Things like chocolate, wrapping paper. You've probably been there, right? When Jimmy from down the street comes to your door knocking and asking for something. And you buy it, not because you want the product, but because you want to help Jimmy down the street. And so our idea is, what if we can combine this desire to help local schools and the desire of the over $3 billion industry to help people abroad, artisans who are working hard to earn a fair living wage, combine those two and use school fundraising to market our
artisans. How did you come
up
with this idea? It seems like a very, you know, abstract idea. How did you come up with this?
Yeah, so it was actually through Kennesaw State University's Enactus team. It was a project that they started, and it was a tabling event kind of thing where we would buy products and then set up tables and trying to sell the products. And when I took it over, I thought, let's take this to the next level, right? Let's have schools market for us through fundraisers and let the students really take hold of the idea and empower them to pursue social entrepreneurship as well. Because before we go into a school to do a fundraiser, we have an educational system that right now we're presenting to students, but hopefully we can create a school curriculum that the teachers will teach to their students about the countries where the products are coming from before they go out and sell them, so they can sell them with
now,
conviction.
I saw a model like this in a lot of the elementary schools. I mean, it was a different model. It wasn't mm-hmm. the same kind of model, but it was all about you get your kid to run 20 laps and like half goes to the school and then half goes to the kid and they basically didn't really win anything but a frisbee.
Yeah.
But you know, it was that kind of model on there. So how do the financials work behind this? So you buy a piece of art from Nepal for $25 and mm-hmm. then what happens?
Right. Great question. So we buy more than one, of course. We buy at wholesale prices from associations like the Association of Craft Producers in Nepal. And then we store the products in our inventory. Unfortunately, drop shipping doesn't work in this scenario. But we'll store the inventory. And then we decided that for different schools, different ways work best to motivate the students, right? And so we give the school suggestions, but we let the teachers, if they have uniforms, they have dress down days, and we motivate the students that way through the school to sell the products. And then I'm not sure if I'm answering your question. Is this where you're going?
I'm just curious, you know, do you buy something for $25 and then, you know, somebody buys it through the school for $50 and how does the financials work?
Right. Gotcha. So we have a 5x markup on all of our products and then we split the profits with the school that we're doing a fundraiser with 50-50.
So you buy something for 10,
mm-hmm.
it gets sold for 50, you make 40, the school gets 20 and you get 20.
That's the idea. Yes, sir.
Yeah, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And have you tried this at any schools yet?
Yes, sir. The Marietta Center for Advanced Academics, MCAA, they're our first partner school. We're so thankful for their help and support. And we've been, I think, hosting two events thus far with them. We've made $2,000 since January of last year. Yeah, and over 3,000 since the project started. And so we're moving forward right now. And we're so excited for the opportunities to host our first full fundraiser because right now it's just been tabling events. And we're trying to get rid of the old inventory that doesn't sell well, so we can have enough money to buy a full inventory of things that do sell well, like our handmade scarves and finger puppets actually have been really popular.
Finger puppets?
Yeah, surprisingly.
You need a good finger puppet.
Right, yeah, there's a few things. So.
I might need one for when I'm driving home on 400 on the way home.
Yeah, traffic's pretty bad.
I won't say which finger, Ryan. It just depends who cuts me off on the road.
Fair enough.
And so how do you plan to market this model? It's a very interesting model. Is this mm-hmm. something you would start locally in things like the Fulton County school system and places like that, and then think about how to take it nationwide?
Yeah. So Cobb County is actually an outstanding place to start because we're the second largest county in the state with over 100,000 students. And so we think the market is definitely there. We're going to start with smaller private schools and charter schools and get them on board, partly because we need a large enough inventory to support the fundraiser, and also because we think that the smaller schools are going to be more willing to partner with us to earn extra money through school fundraisers.
Very, very cool. Well, let's do our fourth entrepreneur from KSU. This is really cool stuff today. I'm loving this. And then I think we're going to go to like a plead the fifth. Are you guys going to ask us questions after? Is that the goal here, Chris?
Well, that could be the goal, although that makes me a little bit nervous, but absolutely. And just before I introduce Elise, one of the things that, you know, that I'm just so inspired when I hear these stories and just being with these students, you know, I'm incredibly passionate about the center and building it and scaling it. And it's easy to stay passionate when you're around, you know, students like this. So this is kind of awesome. And boy, if you're in a room full of students like these and you don't get excited, then, you know, I don't understand how you could not. So anyway, so with that, I want to introduce sort of our last entrepreneur and representing women entrepreneurship, which is totally awesome, right? You're representing the ladies. You are a little outnumbered. And unfortunately, our class is a little outnumbered.
Is
a little bit. It is. So Joey's a little disappointed on the girl-to-guy ratio. You know, it's hurting his game a little bit, I think. But Rhodey's got game because he's got, you know, he's a rapper. So yeah, he's got
course,
it. You know, so and Brian, you know, he plays guitar. So that's given. So Elise, tell us about your business.
Hi, my name is Elise Aiken, and I am in the process and planning on opening a half bakery, half longboarding shop called Baconscape. And then similar to Joe, I will focus on healthier baked goods as well, because I'm a health nut and I love bread way too much to not eat it when it's, when I can easily make it healthier. Because the healthier it is, the more I can eat it. And similar to Joey, I am also opening a, I will have it affiliated on the inside of the shop called my nonprofit called So the World Knows, like S-E-W, because I can't spell it out, so I have to spell it with a pun. But also, I love puns. And so from all the women that I've lived with around the world, I've lived in a number of different third world countries, and these women are just so incredibly talented and so dedicated and hardworking that like they wake up before the sun to start selling these, or start sewing these beautiful handcrafted goods like purses and wallets and all this. But when they sell it in their country, they don't get nearly as much as they deserve for it, whether it's the exchange rate or the tourism. So I will sell their stuff in my shop and then send them the profits back to them. Whether it's like, and very similar to like this bracelet, couple months ago, I was living in a refugee camp over in Turkey. And so there's a thing called a life jacket graveyard. So it's just full of hundreds of thousands of life jackets. And so I snuck one home. I probably shouldn't have done that. But I snuck one home and I'm making bracelets and selling them to some of my friends. I have a bunch of friends that want them already. I just need to figure out how to sew. And sell them and then send all the profits back to refugee relief.
Now, Chris, when I first heard Bacon Skate here, I was thinking that this was a California 2018 initiative.
I do have dreadlocks. So.
Yeah, I was just wondering what kind of Bacon Skate it would be. But tell us about how the model actually works. So when you say that it's half skate, half baked goods, is it basically you're going to sell skateboards, or do people rent skateboards from you and then they get healthy goods there as well? How does the model work?
I'm also like an interior designer at heart. And so I get so excited thinking about like how the layout of the store will work. I want to have like straight down the middle and like side of it will be the bakery side of it, all crazy pastel colors. And then the other side of it will be like the longboarding and the surfboard. So whether you can do waterboards, so longboards you can, for the cruising, you can do waterboards like surfboards or landboards like longboards. And so I'll do that. And also, I had recently thought about renting it, because some people just, when they come to town, they only want to do it for a couple days and then they get bored of it after they run into trees.
The landboards now are like people basically have a paddle, almost looks like a stand-up paddleboard for skateboard. Mm-hmm. For the people that are listening today, that's what it's like.
Mm-hmm. There's two, like for cruisers, they're not mostly for tricks. So you need like counter hills for it. And so I know I can open a bakery anywhere, but in order for me to open a longboarding shop, I'll probably need to have it more in like a coastal area. And so you'd be able to, you just need like the counteracting hills for it. And so that's what I mean by like the landboards, as to where you have like the cruisers as well as skateboards, depending on how big the demographic need for.
And what kind of funding does it take to get this up and going? Because I know getting into, it sounds like a multiple business operation. Mm-hmm. You've got to get, obviously a place to rent. You've got to get some inventory. And what kind of costs will it take, and how are you thinking about raising the money to make that happen?
I was talking to Brian about this earlier. I feel like ironically really blessed with my entire family is in fields that like I could utilize and enroll. Like when Chris and I were talking in class about who can you enroll to like help you with this business, I realized that like, half of my family is like construction, and my dad he makes electricity, and my other cousin is a pastry chef, and my other cousin is a financial analyst, and he's like a stockbroker, so he can help me with like finances. And so then last week when Chris was talking about like, use those people that you know, and like, who can you help bring along your journey with you? I was like, oh my gosh, my entire family. And my aunt and uncle own like a printing business, so I'd have signs and boards and all of that. And I was like, oh my gosh, this family, I was put on this family for a reason. And so while it does take a little bit to like to have a storefront, I do want to have like a physical shop so that I'll also be able to sell the products from So the World Knows inside the shop, where I could do an online presence. I will also have when I was 18, I got really nervous that somebody would take baconskate.com. So I went and bought it. And so I've just had like an empty website for years, because I was like, if somebody decides to name themselves Bacon Skate, I'm done. Like, I can't do skate and bake.
Oh, I'm sure that's going to happen in California. It has to happen. Yeah.
But I Googled it and I said, Bacon Skate is free and it's mine. So I bought
it. Has anybody offered you to purchase that from you?
The domain?
Nope,
yeah, the domain.
Yet.
Nobody's offered you.
Not yet. There are some like Instagram people who are Bacon Skate. So I'll message them soon and say, let me take your name. But so I've had the website forever. It's just empty until I started. But I just wanted to make sure that like nobody would buy it, because I was so nervous about having to change my name.
And what kind of baked goods will you serve there? I know you're talking about you love bread and there may be some healthy goods. What will you be serving there? Will be a big menu or a few things? Is it to get a skater on their way for the day? You know, what will that look like? How will it integrate?
So I'm a health nut. So I love like doing the healthy substitutions for things. My favorite thing to make is banana bread and anything that has to do with chocolate. But what I really want to do is to have all the baked goods specifically after people that I know. So one of my best friends is German and his name is Sven. And so I'll have like the German chocolate cake called like the Sven. And so then like have a picture of Sven and like have people realize like that this is attached more. And so from living in Ghana, I was living in Ghana for about a year and I was like one of the only Americans living in this little village. So I would live with a bunch of Swedish and like Polish girls. And so they would always talk about their recipes for like their favorite Swedish desserts. And so then I'll have like some Swedish delicious pastries, like obscure ones that people don't normally buy, just like a normal chocolate chip cupcake or something. But I'll have like some Swedish pastries and I'll call it like the Elin and like have a picture next to them so they can be like, wow, this is very different. I'm eating.
So Elise, this is amazing. First off, you know, I lived here for a year. And by the way, I was in Ghana. Then I lived in this village. You know, you haven't done, my small piece of recommendation is you haven't done a website yet. That is the first thing I jump on because your story, the product, the story will drive people to either your online presence or your physical location. Because we're just listening to you we're listening to you for a few minutes and I'm finding out you've lived here. The story is amazing. And the only way someone's really going to get that story, they may come into your shop whenever you put it together. There may be some storyboards out there, but your website, I would focus on that immediately, gentlemen, if you would concur, because that story is so unique. I've never heard anything like this before.
Well, I think what we ought to do now, these are four unbelievable pitches today. And by the way, if you didn't, you joined us late in the show or you joined us halfway through lunch or whatever it may be, go to shrimptankpodcast.com if you want to hear all these ideas, because they really run the spectrum when it comes to starting an entrepreneurial business. Or you could download us on iTunes on Shrimp Tank. I'm sitting here with Chris Hanks, my co-host, who's the executive director and founder of the Shore Center for Entrepreneurship. I'm Ted Jenkin. We've got Ryan and Lee with us. And of course, all four of our KSU students, we've got Brian, Rhodey, Joey, and Elise. And I guess maybe we'll turn the tables for the last couple minutes of the program today, and then we'll do our post-show wrap-up and ask you all what questions you might have for us. And certainly you can ask any of us. I'd love to hear you ask the plead the fifth questions of Chris Hanks, because we never do that before. Would you mind doing that in a lightning round here? If they could do a plead the fifth for Chris Hanks, would that work? Well,
with only me?
What about you can ask me anything. Yes, I'm going to say anything. I'm bound to say anything on any show. So it doesn't, you know, you could ask me or Lee or any of us, anything that you want, or Ryan, whatever you want. Want to turn and ask us questions? We'll do it for a couple minutes and then we'll wrap. We'll get out of the program today. So
how many fifths do I get?
You only get one.
Get
fifth.
One. Only no one, amended one. Rules for this segment.
No amended rules. No amended rules. Let's state for the record that Chris did inhale. So that's, you know, we don't even need to get into that.
So just jump.
Yeah. Go ahead. Ask whatever you want.
What's one thing you can learn from somebody you hate?
That actually sounds like a song title, doesn't it?
I don't mind.
Dude, you should make that into a song.
I don't mind answering that. I can tell you because I've hated a good bunch of people over my business. But the thing I learned the most from the people I hate is the competitive juices, because the people I end up hating a lot, I still respect them, but a lot of times I just hate them because sometimes they beat you. When people beat you, you're not fond of them all the time. It sucks losing. But I've learned that, you know, you can get that competitive juice and it sometimes rises you to a bigger level.
Rhodey, the problem is Chris doesn't hate anybody, so he obviously can't answer that. That is true.
I've been working on it for 80 weeks, but I haven't gotten there yet. So,
Well, there is something about separating the message from the messenger, right? Sometimes you're listening to a speaker or you're meeting with another business owner and you don't necessarily respect or like them. However, there's things that you can take away from that. And so you can separate that. And I've never really had a hard time separating that. But that sounds a little bit like a cop-out. I also think that somebody who you don't respect can provide intense motivation for you. For example, when I left corporate life, when I was in my late 20s and started the music thing, when music was music in the 90s, Rhodey.
What are you talking about? Poison? Something like that?
Yeah. So back in the days of the baggy pants and, you know, stop either Hammer Time or Collaborate and Listen. So But I actually, there was a boss that I had, my last boss, that I just didn't respect. And so I took a picture of that boss on the notebook that I was carrying around, almost like Rocky IV, you know, put Drago on the bathroom mirror to motivate him and Rocky IV every day to look at that. I would look at that, not so much that this person wasn't like the most horrible person in the world, but that was a symbol of what I never wanted to go back to. So sometimes, you know, what you don't like can provide motivation. And sometimes to your team that you're leading, sometimes, you know, people would rather work for a cause than a company, but also sometimes defining a common enemy is just as effective. Like, we will not be that, or we will not be him, you know, or her. So I think that could be a powerful motivator.
So entrepreneurship students that I know will be listening to this, not only the four here, but hopefully your class, Chris, if you see Chris taking a picture of you,
watch out. Exactly.
Watch out. Don't come to class anymore.
All right, what else we got? Let's do a couple more on a rapid fire here.
Yeah, so this is for either one of y'all, but both of you are constantly pouring into other people, motivating, aspiring entrepreneurs. How do you stay motivated yourself when you're constantly pouring out?
Yeah. For me, I can tell you, I meditate, and it's a daily morning ritual. I pump myself up. I'm a big believer that you can wire your software whatever way that you want. Mm-hmm. So I read a book many years ago called Learned Optimism. And basically, optimists are not something that you're natural born with. You train yourself. So I don't have bad days. I really don't. And it's a mindset. And so I literally have like my mini pump up every day that gets me going.
Nice. Yeah. And in a similar way, there are some daily rituals that I've learned to sort of adapt. Because I started believing, or started realizing that success is actually measured in days. You know, you're waiting for success to happen, and it really doesn't. Like, did I have a successful day or not? And so going through those activities and rituals, sometimes when you're not feeling motivated, by going through these activities, then, you know, you start becoming motivated. You know, like they say for writers, you don't wait to write, wait till you're inspired to write. You write, and then you become inspired, right? And also to throw onto that as well is, I think, having a big why. Right? If you can answer the question of why, and you can identify your purpose and your why, then nothing's a struggle, right? And so if you could say, okay, but why are you doing what you're doing? What's the significance that you're trying to create?
All right, let's do two more, and then we'll break out.
Well, to kind of dig in a little deeper on what you just said.
Yes, yes, we like that.
What might be your guys' whys? Is it, you know, time, money? You know, why did you guys want to choose the entrepreneur route?
For me, it's legacy. You know, you're only here for a short time. So when I'm gone, you know, the people I've mentored behind, the businesses that I've built, they'll be here. And as they continue to be here, there'll be the story about whatever mad lunatic I was that was running it. But it's legacy for me.
For me, it's about, I guess the summary version will be significance. When I first started businesses, it was just about me and my employees. You know, and I was chasing success, just wanted to support my family and do the things that I like to do as opposed to the things that I had to do. And then it wasn't much later till I realized that success is really about me, but significance is about the impact on others. And I think that one of the most valuable currencies you have as an entrepreneur is the impact you have on somebody else, mm-hmm. right? That effect you have on others is your most valuable currency. So significance became, you know, it's like, okay, it's not about me. My life is not big enough to live just for me. So there's got to be something bigger, and identifying that bigger, you know, like there's a lot of entrepreneurs that I know that are way more successful than I'll ever be and ever have been. But can I create more significance? And another reason why I'm so incredibly passionate about the work that we're doing, because I do believe that entrepreneurship has the power to change lives, and we're impacting a lot of lives.
You want to do one more or no? One more question? Do you got one?
Yes.
And then we'll wrap it up.
For all of the younger entrepreneurs out there who possibly feel like their life can go in plenty of different ways when they're trying to like nail down their passions and goals, like, is there a single piece of advice that you would give to them if they are not sure which path to take?
Do you want to answer that first?
No, I like when you go first, man. I like to
Sure whether to be an entrepreneur or be an employee, you mean?
Or figuring, yes, and also finding like your passions and your goals. And I know that we talk about passions in class.
Yeah. My big thing is that the quicker you can find what you love to do, don't worry about how much money you make, because the money will follow. You gotta love what you do every day so it doesn't feel like a job, no matter whether you're an employer or an entrepreneur, and all the rest of the money will follow. A lot of people choose careers for money and then get into it for 15 years and they hate it.
Yeah.
But you had to choose what you love to do, and then the rest will follow. because you're really passionate about it, you'll make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I totally agree with that. You know, we wait and we're waiting, and entrepreneurs don't wait for resources to become available. We create them. So we got to get moving. You got to get moving. Action trumps everything in entrepreneurship. So I don't know what to do. I'm going to start doing. And passions are developed. You don't know you're passionate about that person you want to date until you start dating them, usually, you know, so they're developed. And passion also comes sometimes from being excellent at something that is valuable, that creates value for somebody. And it's like, wow, I didn't know I could be passionate about this, but wow, I'm starting to get good at it, and I'm starting to see the impact I have on others. Wow, I'm starting to really like this, but I would have never known that had I not started. So you just have to get started. And as you guys have heard me say in class, you know, you can't steer a parked car, you know, mm-hmm. Get moving.
Unless you're teaching Chong, then you can steer a park.
Going back to skate and bake.
Something like that. Well, hey, we wanted to thank all four of you for coming on the show today and joining us and sharing our ideas. Next week on The Shrimp Tank, we're going to have Christopher Dull, who's the president and CEO of the Global Franchise Group. So it should be pretty cool stuff next week. And more of the weeks now, I think you're going to see us bring on students from KSU and different schools and sometimes some high schoolers to hear the ideas and the moguls and the entrepreneurs and the future of tomorrow. So thanks so much for listening to us on The Shrimp Tank. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.